Hey friends, we're just taking a break on Gene Valentino's Grassroots Truthcast. Thanks for joining us. During this commercial is where I get to grab my pillow. The Mike Lindell My Pillow. Up to 80% off. Promo code GeneV. Make sure you get one of these. It's a great, great pillow. Patented product that seems to work perfectly for me. For me, no more stresses in the neck or morning aches when you're getting up. It seems to have the ability to comfort my head and my neck while I'm sleeping at night, and I get a restful sleep that allows me to do a great job during the day. But I guess because of my pillow, and thank you, Mike Lindell, for offering us my pillow. Promo code GeneV, up to 80% off. Got to get back to our show.
With breaking news and political commentary from a public servant, serial entrepreneur, community leader, philanthropist, and American patriot, and a darn nice guy, it's time for the Grassroots Truthcast and your host, Gene Valentino.
Hi, friends, Gene Valentino, and welcome to another exciting episode of Gene Valentino's Grassroots Truthcast. You know, every week we're doing this with people from social, political, economic, entrepreneur, all different sorts of ways of life, trying to get a feel of that old Horatio Alger, American gospel of success, the whole concept of what makes America so great. Today's guest is Ryan Binkley. Ryan is a presidential candidate. Who, you say? Ryan Binkley. And where the heck has he been? Ryan Binkley's out of Dallas, Texas, an entrepreneur, a churchgoer, pastor himself. Ryan, brief introduction from you, please.
Well, thank you, Gene. It's great being with you. Hello, everyone. My name is Ryan. I am a CEO of a consulting company based out of Dallas, Texas. I co-founded about 20 years ago. We have about 400 employees and about 16 offices across the nation and in Canada. We do merger and acquisitions, business consulting. I'm also a pastor. My wife and I co-founded a church and started it about 10 years ago. And I've got five kids, busy in life, but I'm running as presidential candidate, really because I feel called to. At the end of the day, right now, our nation's in a lot of trouble financially, economically, big issues at stake, whether Social Security is going to be able to make it, healthcare is strangling our nation. And I've got some clear plans for that. We need an economic revival. And also we need a heartfelt spiritual revival. Something is so broken in our country. And I really feel led to speak to it. And what is the message for the Republican Party in urban America? How can we unite our country? That's why I'm running. Great to be with you, Gene.
Ryan, thank you so much for that introduction. We both come from the same cloth. We're entrepreneurs with business backgrounds, spiritual guidance along the way for me as well. And I will tell you, I regret not having gotten to know you more. Let's talk about border security. What's your plan as a president of this United States on border security? It's such a broad-based issue.
Well, thank you. You know, right now, obviously, everyone knows the problem. You know, it's really big. I mean, we've got millions of people pouring into our country. We really have no idea who they are. Furthermore, we probably have 20 million plus people that have been in our country 20 or 30 years, really, that came across the border at some point in time. And many of us don't know who they are either. They have fake IDs. Many of them have fake Social Security cards, and they're getting by. But many of them have integrated into our country. They own businesses, own homes today. All throughout America, they're doing some very difficult jobs. And so we've got an open border. And because of that, we've got a crisis with fentanyl and opioids. You know, Gene, I think it's likely going to kill 100,000 people in this next year. You know, primarily young people, 18 to 45. And so, and we've got political polarization. Nobody wants to come together to come up with a solution. So we've got the Republicans on one end. They want a secure border. At the end of the day, we've got to secure it. President Trump tried to and valiantly effort, but didn't have the resources or money from Congress to do it. So I like what he tried to do. He had a slush fund of about $60 million. But at the end of the day, it's about a $30 billion project to get it done. But it's important that we fund it.
Yeah. But one of the things I have concern with that you're bringing up, your intentions are sincere. We listen to other political candidates talk about their same concern. They also describe some righteous indignation over the way we behave. And some of this behavior is actually what has been blocking the ability to, it's not like Donald Trump didn't succeed at the border. To me, it's like he was blocked because of bad behavior at many fronts. How do you get around the behavior issue? I think there's a, I hate to say it, the root cause, I hate that term, but the root cause of this problem, it seems to lie more in how the Republicans and Democrats have put themselves ahead of the citizen you're reaching out to here.
You know, Gene, I really think it's bigger than that. I think it's not about, you know, President Trump's personality or anything like that. At the end of the day, we're going to have a real solution that meets some of the needs in order to get agreement for legislation. And so this is it. This is the political world we're in. Congress holds the power of the purse. Unless we have 2/3 of a majority in the House and the Senate, which we've never had, I don't think in my lifetime, you know, it's not going to happen because it's a very polarized issue. So what do we got to do? We have a plan called the Security and Dignity Act that funds the border wall. But this is how we get the money. We actually get some votes by coming up with a decent amount of workforce registration that allows some people that are here to be here. It gets rid of people that have been here in the last 5 years. In fact, there's no place for them to stay because it gets rid of sanctuary cities by requiring E-Verify for every company. It actually gets rid of catch and release. But the way we get the votes, Gene, from independents and some Democrats is we allow more workforce registration and actually make them pay a fine. But after 12 years, they can go to the end of the line. And at the end of the day, this is the way to get it done. This is the solution. This is called leadership. And so that's how we're going to get it done.
Ryan, what about the 20 to 30 million who are arguably in the country already illegally?
Right.
Do you deport them? What are we going to do?
Some of them. Our particular plan kind of draws a line in the sand that if you've been here and if you've come in the most recent 5 years, you have to go home. But if they've been here and not committed any crimes, they've been here for 20 years, they have to come out of the shadows. Let us know who they are. They pay a fine. And that fine is about $1,000 a year for about 12 years. And then after that, they can go to the end of the line. There is no jumping the line. There's no doing things illegally. If they committed a crime, listen, if you and I, you know, got a speeding ticket, right? Or we committed a crime, we're going to pay a fine or we're going to go to jail. At the end of the day, that's what we're going to make this happen. They're going to pay a fine. Going to jail would be the essence of kicking them out of the country. So we're going to do that with probably about 5 million people, the most recent people. But some people have been here a long time and they're doing some work that's about 2% of our GDP. And quite frankly, nobody's in line to do. I mean, they're working in meat processing plants, agriculture, construction. They're digging ditches. I mean, construction would shut down throughout the Southwest if we didn't have some labor help. So, you know, we the people that we want to be here will have an opportunity to be here with legal registration. And then they can pay taxes. They can pay fines, but they get no federal benefits. All that money goes to pay for the border wall.
Your plan, border security plan, and all the points in it, which I've read, which is why I was excited to meet you today, because on GeneValentino.com, as a former county commissioner for 2 terms, I had the experience of realizing some of the gridlock that exists in government. And one of the concerns I have is that I've created a second Bill of Rights, which kind of mirrors your 13 points under your plan. My second Bill of Rights, like the first Bill of Rights to the Constitution, my second Bill of Rights has 11 amendments to them. And one of them mirrors what you're talking about. It has to do with I baited you earlier when I said, what are you going to do with 20, 30 million people who are here? Well, you're not going to get them all deported. Let's face it. So what are you going to do about it? I believe in a plan that gets the American citizen to step up and sponsor some of these people, bring them in under their wing, enjoy some sort of tax credit for taking them in under their aegis, and providing them an education and or training path for them to get to the marketplace and to get into the marketplace, which is what you just mentioned a minute ago, to provide the labor and services that many Americans are ill-equipped or unwilling to do. It gives them, and it's all based on your primary comment, a dignity program. It's done out of a sense of respect and dignity in making them go through a few hoops to becoming an American. I would want them to know about who George Washington is, Abraham Lincoln, Thomas Jefferson. I mentioned the Bill of Rights a second ago. What is it?
It's the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. How many Americans know that, let alone the immigrants? And how would you like to comment on that?
Well, you know, I think it's a great idea. You know, I think we can do that through corporations and companies, basically people that are employing people today, give them an opportunity to sponsor them. But, you know, our plan clearly lays it out. You know, they have no right to citizenship until after 12 years, and then no right then except to go to the end of the line. So, you know, they're not jumping the line. There's so many people that have been waiting 10 or 15 years. I mean, we've got a broken, we have a broken legal immigration system, much less illegal. You know, I pastor, you know, Gene, a multicultural church, many immigrants there, many of them are they're citizens, they vote, but they have family members that have been trying to get here for 15 or 20 years. And they've told me this, they said, Ryan, the Republicans just don't come up with a legal plan, even for people, you know, it shouldn't take 20 years for a relative to be here, even when they're sponsored. And so, you know, we've got worker needs here. The reality is this, we have a worker shortage problem. We have a population problem in the United States of America. That's why Social Security is broke. There's so many things we need to fix this. We could fix by having more kids, but at the end of the day, this, we've got jobs that need to be done. And so we have a decent plan to do it, and it can get done. And it addresses the bigger things. But the main thing everybody needs to know this, it secures the border permanently. It's not based on a short-term plan of putting the military there, because once you do that, and when a Democrat's in office in the White House, which will happen again one day, unfortunately, but it could happen again, they're just going to pull them off. So we need a permanent plan that needs to be funded by Congress. It's going to be ongoing, need ongoing repair. It's going to need ongoing needs. And so it just funds it. It needs to happen in our country. And this allows for it. So
you have just touched on, you mentioned permanent plan. I proposed in my second Bill of Rights, a permanent constitutional amendment that you are correct. We shouldn't have to do this. But for fear that some other party with diverse intentions tries to come back in and pull the rug out from under our a good path of growth in this nation, to prevent that, we need a constitutional amendment. Oh, we'll never get a constitutional amendment through Congress at this time. Well, we have the Convention of States people have talked about. I wouldn't mind you addressing. But really, a constitutional amendment that puts in place a mandate that the United States shall protect its borders, and absolutely, with absolute articulation of what that means, not only in terms of force, technology, intelligence, monitoring of that border, but also an immigration process, which you also addressed. Would you address a little bit more of the immigration process, and then let's move to economic development?
You know, it's a complex issue. Every person's different. Every nation's different. You know, that applies here. People apply here. One of our guys on our advisory team, Admiral Bill Moore, former admiral worked in the Pentagon, in the Navy, you know, his entire career. You know, his wife was Filipino. She had a brother waiting 20 years, I believe, to get entrance in America. Finally got accepted to come. But listen, he was 70 years old. He's like, I've been waiting so long, you know, my life, I'm just going to finish it out here where he is. And so we've got a broken system. We needs to be addressed. You know, there's so many things we can do differently. We just have to take out the inefficiencies in the system, make it work better, more efficient. And it actually meets the worker needs we have. We wouldn't be having a lot of problems that we're having today, because the reality is this, people need people to work. I own a couple of restaurants. I've got a help wanted sign out there all the time, because we pay $13 an hour for somebody to run a cashier, and I can't keep that job full. So there's not a lot of people that are willing and want to work some hard jobs, even to pay a decent wage, and they're entry-level jobs. But you know, that's just an example. People need work done. So once we secure the border, we can allow work registration. We can solve this problem. We can come together and we can fix it. But we need a president that's going to address the issue and actually get it done. And that's why I'm running.
You mentioned something in your immigration strategy about humanitarian campuses. You want to describe what those are, immigration campuses?
You know, I really think this, you know, this is such a complex issue. You know, now it's probably evolved and changed. You know, we have got now President Biden just absolutely opening the floodgates. I mean, for millions of people to get here. I'm not for funding that, by the way, right now with what he has done, because it's too much, especially since he's not willing to give a dime to secure the border. So I think it's got to be part of a complete package. Once the border is secure, then you can start allowing for things like that, and especially even on the other side of the border, allowing some people that are truly seeking asylum. You know, if there's true asylum seekers here and their families in danger, you know, but unfortunately, I think that's a small number of cases today. A lot of people just want a new opportunity and they're looking for work. And so there's a lot of countries that you can get good work in. America needs to not allow people in here that we don't necessarily need. And I think right now we have too many.
The reason you are of interest to me is because when I was a county commissioner, I served 2 4-year terms here in Florida. I would go up to the person and ask them to vote for me again. And some of them were a little terse and didn't, and might have been mad about something I did or said. And I said, look, you don't have to like me. In fact, I'm not here because I want you to like me. I'm here because I want you to believe that I'm the best dog in the fight you've got for getting what you need and want done. Your comment to that statement?
Well, I think, you know, this is a day where we need to really look at what do we really want? You know, America right now, we've never been more divided in my lifetime than we are right now. You know, yeah. I think polls show 75% of America describes our country with that one word, divided. And as you know, you can't get anything done when you're divided. And that's where we're now. We need to heed Lincoln's warnings. You know, Lincoln actually made this comment that, you know, if danger was ever to come to America, it would not come from abroad. It would come from within, and further, yeah, that we would be its author and its finisher. And I think we're just perilously close to this division. You know, I'm seeing the hatred. You're seeing the protest in the streets. I mean, right now we have Palestinians protesting literally bread shops that are run by Jewish people, wanting them to shut down their restaurant. What's happening? And we don't have media speaking against this. We don't have enough. I saw the other day James Carville just on CNN, I think. I mean, just made a statement that Mike Johnson's faith is a greater danger to America. Listen, greater danger than Al-Qaeda. So we've got this craziness going on and people that are just absurd. We need to get back to say, listen, we have laws here in our nation. We're going to protect the rights of business owners. We're going to put you in jail if you violently harm anybody. We're going to put you in jail if you steal from them. You don't have a right to threaten somebody's life. You have the right to peacefully protest. And by the way, you can do that. But that's it. And but also getting back to truth and what really matters and trying to heal these wounds in our nation. These business owners in Jerusalem, they didn't have anything to do with what's going on right there in Israel. So, you know, let's quit it. Let's remember that we're Americans first. If you want to be here, you need to abide by our laws. And let's speak to healing, you know, speaking the truth in love. We have to be sensitive that there's danger all around the world. Of course, wars have always been out there. Yeah. But, you know, our country's different. And, you know, we've had to come through this every few decades. And we're one of these moments where we have to come together. Remember that we're Americans first. Yes. And solve some problems.
We're talking with Ryan Binkley, candidate for president of the United States. No, you haven't seen him on any of the recent debates. But I hope the national GOP, we'll come to the GOP in a second. I hope they revise their rules to include good guys like you. You know, there's a lot of people in this nation who are qualified to be president of the United States. And the ones that filter in and bubble up to the surface and we find ourselves having to deal with, like James Carville, like Adam Schiff, like Mueller and Pelosi and Schumer and Nadler, and how many more do I need to add to that cesspool that they call the swamp, which is why I presume you're running. It's a shame that that bad behavior has fostered intentions that go beyond what's in the greater good, Ryan, of the people, and more towards their own self-preservation. That's what the fear is, sir. And it your comment, please. My concern is that many congressmen and senators, not to mention presidents, find themselves through the gates in the hallowed halls in Washington working for the American citizens. And it's like they went into a time warp. It's like the Stockholm syndrome took over and they forgot everything they promised the American citizens. Why do you think that happens?
Well, let me comment, you know, to what you were talking about earlier, just briefly. You know, I really feel like is the answer, you know, for us to, we have this great division. You mentioned the swamp and everybody attacking each other. what I will do as president, we'll try and lead differently. I'm not going to get anywhere by attacking the far left and creating the division even more. Why don't I do this instead? Start coming up with solutions for the most hurting in our country. And this is what I want to do. I want to start an education program, a volunteer movement in urban America, and let the far left, you know, hate all they want. Let them, you know, deride me all they want. But I want to focus on the most hurting in America. Let's start a volunteer movement teaching young kids, minorities in urban America, how to read, write, and do math. We have a cycle of poverty, an endless cycle, and it's because we have an education crisis in America. Only one out of six Blacks in urban centers today are reading at the eighth grade reading level. We have a math proficiency problem as well. We need to dive in. I'm asking college students, Gene, hey, if you want to change America, join me in a movement to love your neighbor. Abandon politics, but volunteer and give 3 to 5 hours a week mentoring a young child on how to read, write, and do math, and we can change the world. Let's just focus on what really matters, those that need. We'll let the far left argue all they want, but eventually we're going to win people over by helping the most hurting. We can do that through education, teaching young kids in high school vocational trades again, getting them out of this cycle that they have to go to a four-year college and come out with six figures of debt. Let's figure out a way to teach them how to have a trade, become an electrician, a plumber, if you're not going to go to college, a craftsman again, technologist skills. There's so many things you can do without a four-year degree and basically still support your family. I want to start a work movement, a volunteer movement. And then you know what? We're going to let the naysayers do what they do. But I want to win over the heart of America.
Boy, that's music to my ears. I'm an adjunct professor at a local college, and the entrepreneurial program I teach there gears folks towards grassroots practicums of access and entry into the marketplace.
So good.
This is so, folks, we're speaking with Ryan Binkley, candidate for president of the United States, a Republican with a lot more to talk about. You want to share another 30 minutes with us? Mr. Binkley.
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll do so right after this.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and I'm here to tell you about my new product from MyPillow, towels that actually work. Watch this absorbency test. Here's another towel that we randomly went out and bought. Here's one of my towels with a nice design. I don't know if you can see this, but you could line a swimming pool with this. I mean, this is crazy. Get rid of it. Towels that actually work. What a concept. I'm interrupting this commercial to let you know you can get our six-piece My Towels, regular $69.98, now only $29.98. Or you can save 25% on our brand new kitchen towels made with the same technology as our famous My Towels. Also, we have bath sheets, bath towels, washcloths, hand towels, and so much more. And the best part, with your promo code, your entire order ships absolutely free. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use that promo code to get deep discounts on all My Towels. And for a limited time, your order ships absolutely free.
Hi, folks, and welcome back. We're with Ryan Binkley, candidate for president of the United States in this 2024 election. We'll get to the conversation with him as to why you haven't seen him in the top 4 or 5 on the GOP list. That's a separate issue. Let's talk about that in a minute. But Ryan, let's do a deep dive on economic development. That's your passion and mine. I'd like to know what your narrative is going to be on steering a new economic direction. You talked about a rescue plan over the next 7 years. Would you like to delve into that?
Absolutely. Thank you, Gene. You know, I've got 5 kids, Gene, 13 to 23 years old, and I'm looking right at them. And I know this to be true. If we don't do something very, very quickly in the next few years, they are not going to have the same opportunity that you and I had growing up with a stable, you know, banking environment, to be able to afford housing, to be able to start their American dream, to be able to buy a house. Right now, rents are 30% higher than they were just 2 years ago. Mortgage payments are double because of the increase in the interest rates. The average mortgage for the same size house is absolutely double what it was just 2 years ago. Big things, anything related to cars, not in the CPI inflation basket of goods that you read about on the news. So big items are impacting America. 50% of young people under 25 are living with their parents right now. I want that to sink into everybody. When I was growing up, it was about half that. It's not that there's anything wrong with that, except the fact they don't have a choice. They need to have a choice. And so what I've put together is the number one killer to the wealth of America. The number one killer of really the economy for the poor and for the lower middle class is inflation. It impacts us all. But when food prices go up 25 and 30%, rents go up, you know, Gene, this impacts somebody that's making 20, 30, 40, 50 grand a year, way more than it does you and I and the average American. And so what this is that the largest tax on the poor. And this is the reason we have income gaps in America. You know, the Democrats cry out, why do we have income? Why is the disparity so big? Well, the disparity is so big because we run trillion-dollar deficits every year and we keep printing money in order to make those payments. So I've have to explain to America that we're $33 trillion in debt. Not only that, we're going $2 trillion in debt more every year. In a few short years, we're going to be $50 trillion. And the only way we get out of it is to print money. And when we print money, that causes the money supply to increase. That's what causes inflation. So the only way to stop inflation, the only way is to stop spending and get rid of waste. And the number one killer to spending today is interest payments, which is 8% of our budget, and healthcare. So healthcare, it's about 35% of the overall budget. And, you know, Gene, we collect about, I don't know, $3 trillion in spending in taxes for healthcare, but we spend $4.5 trillion. So we're not even collecting the taxes. And the reason is healthcare inflation is 40% higher than regular inflation. And regular inflation, this is the killer, is 50% higher than wage inflation.
Which so throws us deeper into debt.
Yes. So the problem is our wages are not increasing. So every senator and congressperson that says debt doesn't matter, they're lying.
That's
and the
right.
reason they're lying is because wages don't keep up with inflation. And it's
time
killing
out. You don't hear that from Republicans. You hear that smack talk from Democrats only. I hate to be so segregational in this conversation, but it seems that that's the narrative on that side.
It's true, but Republicans aren't coming up with a plan. You know, President Trump, I love a lot that's of things true. He did, Gene, but you know what? We went $7.5 trillion in debt. You know, he did some good things. I can't fault him all because of COVID, but at the end of the day, we did a helicopter drop of trillions of dollars of cash, and we said, hey, don't worry about paying it back. We
Time
gave
out.
People too much money. I mean, we gave away too much money. And so that's what caused it. That's what caused
I get it. Time out. Real quick question. When you're president of the United States, what are you going to do about the 5 to 6 layers of staff of all the bureaucrats? You fire them all and put your own team in? And that I'm talking thousands of people. Or are you going to do what Trump did and leave some of those staffers that really were appointed by Bush and Obama? Are you going to let those folks stick around and continue to drive the narrative?
You know,
I'm making a point. My point is that I believe, Ryan, that Trump's shortfall is that he didn't clean house to get his own team totally in place to execute on the things he intended. Anthony Fauci's at the top of the list.
Yeah, maybe so. But the real problem that he had, I mean, from early on, I mean, he was dealt a bad hand. I mean, what other president, and I'm, again, not surrogating, I'm not a surrogate for him, but what other president, you know, had to deal with the Russia collusion thing for 2 years?
Right.
Or what other president had to deal with an impeachment for making a phone call? You know, our president today has got an open border. Our president today has absolutely set the FBI on fire against President Trump. And so he's dealt a bad hand to begin with. At the end of the day, though, you know, I think some of the problems in leadership wasn't just that Fauci was in charge. Fauci should have never been given the pulpit. He shouldn't have given him the ability to speak as much as he did and have the influence he did. So that's one key thing that we could have done different. But you know what? I'm not here to talk about that so much because he did a lot of great things. President Trump did a lot of great things. And I think that if he would have got a hold of the budget a little bit better and also spoke to the heart of America a little bit clearer, and we can do that and still do that better. He could change things today, even in this
role.
But
in your organization, you're running a capital investment, venture capital type operation. You're investing in companies all over the world. Do you allow other people in your team, or are these people strictly abiding by your policies that represent what got you there on behalf of your shareholders?
Yeah, you know, there's 15 departments underneath the White House. And what I would do, I've got 5 companies, Gene. If I had a bad culture in one of my companies, I don't get rid of the 100 employees in that one company. I get rid of the leader. So, and I get rid of the leadership. So I think there is a leadership crisis. You have to have leaders over every department that share your core values. Yeah. We have those at our company, you know, unity, integrity, diligence, excellence, golden rule. You know, we have to have people that believe in the Constitution, that believe in the rule of law, that believe in that the fact that you if one of your leaders in your organization asks you to do something illegal, you know what? You don't do it. In fact, you raise the red flag and you go to the press or whatever, because we're not going to do that in America. And so, you know what? It needs new leadership. The FBI, all these agencies that have corrupt leadership, education. We need leaders that will hold true to what we hold, what we believe, the Constitution. We need education. It's going to be about education and not propaganda or politics. Okay. We got to get that crap out of our schools. Put parents back in charge again of their kids' education. Get the teachers and the propaganda to really submit to just teaching again. We're falling so far behind in education. We've got to do it the right way.
Speaking of that, what departments or agencies would you cut in government, or eliminate?
Every one of them need to be cut. So, you know, I would take a business person's approach to that. You know, just like I was about to lead into, you know, healthcare. Healthcare is rife with monopolies. Healthcare is rife with no transparency. I mean, Gene, this is the biggest industry in America. Keep in mind, it's 3 to 4 times bigger than the military. And it's the only thing you and I purchase every day where we don't ask how much does it cost when we go in there.
Right.
We just say, hey, give me your card. We find out 90 days later what it costs. It is a socialized program already. I remember when Obamacare came about, you know, all us Republicans were going, no, we can't have a single payer system. We've already got a socialized medicine because we don't know what it costs. We don't know what it costs. I mean, and we've been convinced it's okay. So not one Republican, not President Trump, not Nikki Haley, not Ron DeSantis. Nobody is talking about transforming healthcare. So what I would do, require and demand price visibility. Absolutely allow small companies like yours and mine to join together with other ones so we could have preferred pricing like big companies have. Absolutely demand that now we get rid of big pharma's control over the patents. Right now, we give them patent extensions 10 and 15 years longer than any other nation. So we spend twice as much on healthcare as any other nation in the world. And you know, we're not even in the top 20 in patient outcomes.
No, I know so that,
I would clean house here. I'd clean house here. And you know, and that's just one example, but it's going to go to the whole industry. And when we do that, we can balance the budget, Gene.
That was the original intention of the HMA and the PPO networks, was supposed to consolidate costs on the provider side. It didn't work. And then you remember the mantra coming out of Obama, you get to pick your own doctor. Where did that go?
No, it's out the window. And in fact, you know, healthcare is so broken. So we can save healthcare, but really, you know what we're going to do? I want you to think about like Uberization of healthcare. You know, you can Google your doctor. You can see his ratings. You can see what prices are, what services are. And you know what, Gene? You can shop. Think of your car insurance. How easy is it for you to change if you don't like your car insurance? It needs to be that easy again for health insurance. We can do this. We can, basically right now, the health insurance companies are in charge of our lives. We need to put the patients back in charge.
Ryan Binkley, candidate for president of the United States. Go to www.binkley2024.com. More on his positions on these points we're bringing up today on Gene Valentino's Grassroots Truthcast. And in the last 10 minutes we have here, candidate for President Binkley. What would you push off to the states? We don't want socialism and Marxism pervading us on the national level, but because of the incompetence and bad behavior and duplicity between Republicans and Democrats and their own brew of bad behavior, there's a feeling that we should push some of these federally based initiatives back down onto the state level, such as insurance and healthcare. I'm concerned that a lot of the immigration process and the voting process has been hurt by the fact that it's been pushed down to the state level, and there's a lack of uniformity and parity across our nation in things that should be national. I'm not a big government kind of guy. In fact, I want less government, not more government. But there's certain things, like you mentioned earlier, like the military, that we need to have on a national basis, like the infrastructure of a highway system between states. You're not concerned about the quality of the concrete when you'll go from Texas to Louisiana. The concrete's the concrete of the highway. But the radio systems, which, and the cellular systems, which know no boundaries, there's certain things that are national and should be, and taxes. But what I don't understand is why there is, at what point do we say, I'm so distrustful of the federal government, let's push that down to the statehood. And Ryan, I'm concerned that we do push it down to the statehood, creating more of a disjointed governance in our nation between states.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, I think you hit on a few of these things. You know, if I talk about border, you know, the border needs to be a national issue. You know, Gavin Newsom in California should not have a different border policy than Greg Abbott in Texas. In fact, it's a national security issue. So we need to be able to override on the authority they have to make sure we're securing our country at the end of the day. He could let them come on boats. I saw the other day where boats are coming in on the California coast now because the border was tougher to get through. So at the end of the day, we need to protect our borders. That needs to be a national issue. You know, I like the fact that voting for elected officials is a state issue. We don't want to get involved in national, you know, politics. I would say this, with the exception, could we have a rule that you need to show an ID, a valid driver's license or some sort of state ID in order to be able to vote? You know, you can't get on an airplane without one. You can't ride public transportation without one. You can't go anywhere without one. I think it's time that we secure and bring safety to our voting systems. And then after that, let the states decide, hey, what machines do you want to use? Do you want paper ballots? Do you want combination? I think, you know, we need to let them, because if it becomes a national thing, we start to ruin, I think, the integrity of what it was meant to be. I'm really for giving the states everything that the Constitution is not clear on. You know, so education is one of those things that should belong to the states. You know, right now we do have a Department of Education. I think it needs to be cleaned out quite a bit. I don't mind getting you rid of that completely. I do think this, in the meantime, you know what? Let's hold at least California, New York, some of these far liberal states to some sort of accountability with basics in education for the sake of our children. You know, They would probably get away with any standard at all. And so yeah. I hate the fact that we would devalue.
Ryan, we lost your audio.
I got you back. So anyway,
why don't we create some legislation that takes their billions of dollars that these universities have in their foundations and let them forgive their own student loans?
Well, absolutely. In fact, you're bringing up another topic now, but at the end of the day, this is one of the greatest atrocities, I believe, to capitalism and to our very republic, that the president of the United States is actually picking out the students and the young people that have the highest growth cap opportunities for income and canceling their personal debt while allowing those that are poorest in our country to maintain whatever debt they have. It is ridiculous. He's simply buying votes is all he's doing. He's trying to set up his next election cycle and trying to get the youth vote of America. And I'm telling young people, every college campus I go to, I'm listening, it's the worst thing for your financial future for the government to pay for your debt. And I was at a college, New England College, and I said, listen, let me explain it to you, because you would agree that if they do it for you this year, that it'd only be fair that we do it next year. Agreed? And they all went, yes. I said, then the year after that, yes. Well, now you've got a cycle of this, and now you can't buy a house when you're 28 years old. I was 28, correct. I could buy a house. You're not going to be able to. Now, how many of you want it? Because all we've done is print endless amounts of money to give you a short-term benefit, alienating the other half of America that doesn't have your problem. They've got a different problem with debt. And now you're picking and choosing winners and losers. That's not who we are as Americans.
With a 70% income tax rate to pay that debt. That's where we're going. There's so much more to share with you. We're talking with Ryan Binkley, candidate for the 2024 election for president of the United States. My only regret is that I didn't meet Ryan Binkley sooner. But Ryan come forward on Gene Valentino's Grassroots Truthcast today. Okay, to summarize, you started off on the border. Yeah, let's seal it up. And you brought up some issues on that. Again, folks, his link's on our website. It's on his website, too. Binkley2024.com. The second item that we focused on today was an economic restoration plan that probably extends out over 7 years based on the transition we need to get out of the mess. And then we touched on a lot of other things. Before we go, we got a hell of a great democracy, a constitutional republic, Ryan. And I'm tired of Americans speaking bad about America, not to mention the rest of the world. I don't mind us being self-deprecating and correcting our shortcomings from time to time. But it's time for us, and we should take the lead, and I look to you to do that, to brag highly about the wellness of this nation, the longest continuously operating governance in the world, and that we should be proud of what America is and stands for. We certainly have our faults and our differences, but the structure, whether you like it or not, has been the reason why we've survived so long. And I would like you to talk more specifically now about the benefits of the two-party system, Democrat and Republican, and the shortcomings of it, ergo why you're not seen on the ballot. Take it away.
You know, I think you brought up a wonderful point that, you know, it's a great reminder that our Constitution was divinely inspired. You know, I hear so many people just degrade Christianity today, and this thought that somehow Christianity is a bad thing for America. What are we talking about? If you look at all the churches, all the charities that we've done, not only in America, but across the world, the universities, especially those that started out that way, like Harvard, by the way, started out being a Christian college. It was philanthropists that gave significant amounts of their wealth because they wanted to believe in the core values and the moral code of our day, that they believed that there was something good about following moral law. And now our country's grown, and it's basically influenced the world in so many ways. And we've had people die for our freedom and die for the freedom of other nations, so communism and terrorism wouldn't expand across the globe. I think it's important that we remember that. And, you know, when we look at our country today, it's divided. We've got people that are willing to give that up and let that go. And they're truly ready to embrace other forms of government. A socialist type government that really is not even the bedrock of our foundation. And so we have to remember who we are. We have to remember what's important. You know, our parties are broken today. You know, they're looking for leaders. You know, right now there's not one answer in any party, I don't think, because I have a message that's just different for our country. It's time for our country to unite. You know, President Lincoln, it was really amazing. If you can imagine leading a country and the state of division it was. You know, he had the ability to say, hey, listen, I recognize that we all pray to the same God. Speaking of the soldiers in the North and the South, we all read the same Bible. Is it possible, Gene, that, hey, we're all Americans here. I need to remind everybody that I value you and that we're all Americans. Let's get back to what really works, because the points that we're disenfranchised on, I think we can improve on. I think we can improve on caring for the poor, but I have a different way of doing it. It's called charity. It's called volunteerism. It's called a different way. It's not just another big government program. We're out of money. We need to communicate clearly what that is and means. And Republicans haven't done a good job of that. We've gone into much debt as our Democrats have. We spent money on different things. We have to get back to wisdom and stewardship. And I think that the two-party system, it ends up kind of working. But at the end of the day, what's broken in it is it doesn't allow this voice to come up. Because now it's big enough to, it wants to set the parameters to who can be heard and who can't be heard. So our party has failed us in that way. I'm staying in. I could have easily gone on flip to an independent group or anything like that. I really feel called to be a Republican. I've always been a Republican. Stay with this message of who we are and really challenge our party to really do this, expand and grow, influence others, not giving up who we are, but actually getting back to the core. Well, I'm the farthest right person financially. Nobody else is saying balance the budget. It's not even coming out of their mouth.
How about a constitutional amendment that says balance the budget?
Yes. Well, we already have it in our Constitution that we need to have one, and we don't even follow the rules that we have. So, you know, it's about communicating clearly that the dream of America can be attainable for everyone, but we need to care for the most hurting. And let's shine this lamppost of liberty all over the world. Let's keep that strong. That's my message. I'm going to keep sharing it and appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
Ryan, you touched on something that really touches me, really. When I was at a neighborhood precinct meeting of my constituents as county commissioner recently, I was invited back, and I wanted to, this was all spontaneous and unrehearsed or unplanned, and they asked me to say a few words. I got up, and the only thing I could say to them is how grateful I was, and I wanted to thank them for having participated in a process that gave me the right to serve the nation, to try to do some good. And that, frankly, sir, is what I see in you, and I'm so proud of you. No matter what the outcome, you're standing up and you're distinguishing yourself. In my observation, you're distinguishing yourself by standing to principles that should overshadow bad behavior. And so instead of a third party, like you said, as an independent, you see the benefit of fixing or remedying the existing GOP, which you choose to stay part of. I remember back. Do you remember the early days of our government when the British were trying to seize control of this nation remotely? And when they put the word out to the writers of the Declaration of Independence, the signatures, that if anyone signs that document, we the British, will come to your home and take you from your home and string you and hang you from the highest tree in your front yard for all those to see, to set the message that you will not proceed with this constitutional republic we were trying to create way back when. It reminded me, sir, of the good tidings you're doing now and others that before you and me that believed in a concept so passionately that they were willing to put their lives on the line for a concept called a constitutional republic, a democracy. And they were doing that for you and me, people that didn't know us and we didn't know them. And here we are forgetting that. How dare we forget that? How dare we turn our backs on those people who defended a concept of a constitutional Democrat republic that came long before you and me? We just learned about it in school and in life. But it's here now, and it's not going away. And whether you're president of the United States or not, I pray that you continue your path to bring forward the standards, the principles, the mores that you espouse, not only to your investment community around you, but to the nation. I see a wonderful path ahead of you in government for this nation. And I look at you, sir, as a true leader. And thank you personally for being on my show today, Gene Valentino's Grassroots Truthcast. You really have evidenced yourself as a true leader to me. And I hope the rest of these characters pick up on this guy named Ryan Binkley. What do you think?
Well, thank you very much. And really appreciate the opportunity to be with you. You know, encourage everyone, you know, go to our website. We put stuff out there on social media every single day. Share it with some friends. It's a different message for our country and for our party. It's time for something new and different. You know, I support Trump and many things that he did. But at the same time, I have to look to the future and go, how are we going to heal our nation? How are we going to move forward? And, you know, you brought up something really amazing. You know, this Constitution, this dream of our country is only valid as long as we pass the baton to the next generation. And really what's at stake today really is our financial future. You know, the dollar's being eroded. And I've said this often. I really believe this, Gene, that if we don't do something soon, you know, our generation, your mind, will be known as the generation that prospered the most but sacrificed the least. More wealth has been come in our generation than the previous two combined. And all we have to do is get it in order a little bit for the next one. Share this principles of our free government, of a constitution that really matters. And all of this is at stake today. That's why I'm running. That's why I'm in this race. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me, Ryan. Your website again?
Binkley2024.com. And be sure and follow us on Facebook, social media, and Instagram.
And folks watching, feel free to go to GeneValentino.com and subscribe. You'll find Ryan Binkley's interview under Grassroots Truthcast there. We look forward to your comments on this episode today. Mr. Binkley, thank you for joining us. We wish you the very best. And folks, thank you for joining us for another episode of Gene Valentino's Grassroots Truthcast. Have a good day.
Thanks for joining us for Gene Valentino's Grassroots Truthcast. Be sure to like and subscribe, and God bless America.